I probably just got to get married.
That's what I was thinking. Now, that's exactly why I asked this question, dog. Ladies, you hear the voice. He's in pharmacy school. He woke. You know?
He crazy.
Got great teeth, this kid. What are we doing, huh?
You just made him cover his mouth.
Change lives out here, ladies. Get involved. Be active. Community service. You know?
Deepa did ask for a pledge for action.
Disrupt.
So that's disrupt.
Disrupt your current dating life.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of American Daisies. I'm Arjun.
And I'm Akash.
It is early in the morning.
Yeah.
We're in Silver Spring, man. Yesterday, you know, we bank our episodes, so we were in D.C. for a couple days doing a bunch of interviews, and we got a chance to talk with Deepa Iyer yesterday, and she turned us on to a young gentleman that I'm thrilled to talk to. He's a subject of her book. She profiles you for the book, right? This is Eves Gomez. Is it Gomes?
Oh, Gomez.
Gomez.
Yeah.
Parents were immigrants, got stuck in a system where they became undocumented. He's an undocumented, well, I'll let you explain your status in a second, but he's in college, he's in graduate school, getting his postgraduate degree.
Man, he's a cool young kid. We'll let him tell all that
stuff.
All
right, we'll let him tell all
that
stuff.
He's just a cool young kid with a better voice than you. That's all we need to worry about for now. You know what I mean?
Welcome to the show, Eves. Thanks for giving us some of your time, man.
Nah, for sure.
I mean, I guess the best way to start would be maybe if you wouldn't mind telling the story of what went down.
Yeah, sure. I can do that. So, basically, my family first came to the United States back in 1994. My dad came over first. Then he brought my mother and I over. I was originally born in Calcutta, India.
Okay.
So, mom grew up in the cut, which is like where Mother Teresa had her, I don't want to say shop, but
that's what she was really operating at.
Yeah, her convent. And my grandparents actually got a picture with her over there. Y'all can check that out. But yeah, so my parents really came from a humble upbringing. So they came here just like so many other immigrant people come, and it's to try and provide more opportunity for the children. So it's weird. So I consider myself an immigrant person, but to be honest, I've not really had a lot of, I have the immigrant upbringing, but I don't have a lot of the challenges a lot of immigrant people face. So like,
what do you mean by
learning
that?
How to assimilate into a different culture, learning a different language. Because my earliest memories growing up was actually living with my grandparents, who you met upstairs. And their younger son is my cousin. I'd be watching like Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and Full House with them. And that's how I learned English.
Right, that's an amazing story, man.
So like, you know, I didn't have to go through the whole like acclimation phase. Cause
see, that's where the swag comes from.
Yeah.
Fresh Prince.
I'm glad kids your age are still watching Fresh Prince. It's one of the most important shows.
Yeah, it's a great show. It's
phenomenally educational, you know what I mean? Like, everything you need to know, you could pick up from Will Smith.
Of course. You know how it is. So that was actually my earliest memories growing up. And so to give you a little bit of background, my parents were asylum seekers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really going to get too much into that, but
of course.
With that, you're allowed to get a renewable work permit.
Uh-huh.
So actually, like, the first, like, 12, 13 years of my life, I basically thought of myself like an average American kid.
Because you didn't know your status was in flux at all?
No, I knew that because I remember when we were younger, my parents would always say, like, yo, just pray that we get a green card. So, like, every night I go to sleep, and I pray for two things. I pray for, like, our football team to be good, and I pray that we get a green card, whatever that is.
Right.
But I didn't know what that meant. And I never really felt the implications because with the work permit, my parents were able to do what so many other immigrant families able to do. Like, they busted their asses off. My dad was a hotel worker, worked like 13, 14 hours so he can put my mom through school.
Wow.
And then she was finally able to become a computer professor at Northern Virginia Community College.
Wow.
And with that, like, we're actually able to move up the economic ladder. So we lived in like the apartment for a long time, actually like across the street from here, and moved into a house, et cetera, et cetera. And in the meantime, I had my K through K through 9 education here. And it was not until 2008 that things started to change. Because in, actually, 2006. So I think I was like...
You were young, you're 12.
Like 14. I was born in 92.
Oh, you're born in 92. Never oh, right, right. You moved here in 94.
94. Okay. About a year and a half. And so that's when my parents' case was no longer appealable. So the judge basically said, like, that's it. And you can no longer appeal your case. So my parents lost their work permit. And for the first time, I actually got to see what it's like to be undocumented. So it wasn't until like 13 years in that we lost status. And then so my dad had to quit his job, start working under the table.
Right.
My mom had to quit her teaching job. She couldn't teach anymore. She couldn't teach anymore. She was pursuing like her PhD, whatnot.
Wow.
And, but like for me and my brother, like we still spoiled kids. Only thing I ever asked them was like, yo, what's for dinner? You know?
Right.
Or can so-and-so come over to our house? And, that was that. And then in 2008, so my dad's crazy. Because you think, like, once you lose your papers, like, the first thing you want to do is, like, stay quiet and keep low.
Right.
This guy's like, yo, I'm going to go follow my dream. I'm going to open up a restaurant. I'm like, why? So we have a lot of relatives in the area. And my uncles helped open up a shop up in Baltimore, up in Falls Road. And we were actually doing really well. Usually people don't make profit with the restaurant and stuff within the first year. We were actually starting to make profit and stuff. Yeah. Granted, our restaurant was haunted, but that's a whole different story.
Okay. That's part two of this podcast.
That's part two.
They're not very good ghosts if you still turn a profit. They're not the most effective ghosts.
They only come out at night, man. Restaurant's closed. They're good.
I got you.
Crazy stuff. But one day my dad was driving home from work. This was in 08. And, he got pulled over by police because he had a blown taillight. And next thing you know, it was August 9th of 2008. I still remember it was like yesterday. The day was beautiful just like it is today. And basically, police, immigration, and customs like raided our home. It was like 6 in the morning. And that was like the last day I saw my dad.
Wow.
Fuck.
Yeah.
When you say raided, and forgive me if this is a prying question, were they... I get the evocative image of them, like, busting in, like, searching the house, or was it less...
Treating you like you're criminals, basically.
Well, there's, a little bit to that. So, when... It's so important to know your rights. Is anyone, whether you're being pulled over at a stoplight, or if you're having someone search you or coming into your home, like, first thing we should have asked, in hindsight, is we should have asked them if they had even a warrant.
Right.
But my parents didn't know all that, so they just opened the door.
Right.
But I remember, like, they came in, they searched all the rooms, they started asking me questions, like, who live here? But ultimately, they...
And you were how old at that point?
I was...
2008.
So, yeah.
I was, like, 16.
Yeah, man, you were a kid.
I was going to be going into my junior year of high school.
Man, and that can be an incredible... I mean, I imagine that was a...
That was a tough time. And for just any high school student, you know?
Cops are coming at you.
Yeah. So basically that was like the last day I saw my dad. They walked him out. That's the last memory I have of him, of him being walked out in handcuffs. And the following week my mother and I were also taken into detention. And it's probably the worst thing I can remember is like sitting in the cell with your mom. But fortunately after I think 7-8 hours they let us out because my younger brother is a US citizen. And at the time he was like 12, so we were able to be together, and pretty soon we were finally able to attain an attorney, and the attorney basically worked with my mom, got her a 1-year extension basically to like wrap up all our property and everything, because like everything we had is here.
Wow.
So she got 1-year extension. In the meantime, my dad was actually held in detention up in Pearsall, Texas, or down in Pearsall, Texas.
Oh my goodness.
And that was 6 months. So that was probably 6 months to a year was probably the hardest time of my life.
Yeah, and you're in high school, like.
And I'm in high school.
How do you deal with it? Especially the day of, that's what I was my question, the day of They came in the morning, you said. That's the they first came thing in the morning, so yeah. You got to go to school the next day, and like...
This was summertime. This was right after, before school started.
But yeah, how do you just like deal with a regular life, basically, is my question.
Yeah, so it was hard. I mean, but I guess mentality I put myself into, I'm going to be too tired to be depressed. So like, I did like track and field. Wow. I took all this like little AP classes, whatnot in school. I tried to keep myself busy, and I had a good support system. I had my friends.
Were your friends supportive?
Yeah, I can get into that because, like, after basically in February of 2009, my dad was sent back, and in July of 2009, my mom was sent back. So, man, before the start of my senior year, I was going in like without either of my parents. Actually, only reason like I'm here is because like my grandparents, who I'm living with right now, they're like the most supportive people in the world.
I mean, so, I feel so great. You know, so grateful for you that you had some family. Yeah. That you had, you mentioned you had some companies and stuff. That is that part of the support system that you could lean on?
That is the support system I can lean on. And so I had my grandparents. I had my cousin who's still getting ready for the day. They took us in. And it's like I never left home. Like, that's how loving and inviting they were to us. That's the best way I can summarize it. So, yeah, I start my senior year. I didn't know how to go about things because ultimately it was like I was going to graduate high school and then immigration basically said you're going to have to leave the country and go back to your home country of India. And that's a country I've never seen before.
Right. I mean, to you, you were American. You'd said that already. I mean, in your head, you knew you were of an immigrant status, but I mean, what else did you know but this
exactly.
place?
So the first person I actually came out to was one of my counselors. So, like, I was a geek in high school, so I got chosen for this one, like, whatever, scholars program called Maryland Distinguished Scholars.
That's what's up.
And she called me, and she was like, yo, why didn't you apply to this yet? And I was like, yo, Miss Murphy, I don't know how to put this to you, but, like, I don't have legal status in this country. I'm not supposed to be here. And to my surprise, like, she was so empathetic. And that she invited me into her office, and she's like, yo, you're still going to go to school. You're a bright kid. And like, I wish this was the experience all undocumented youth have as they try to go into high school or into college or technical school or whatever they want to do. But unfortunately, that's not usually the case.
But well, shout out to Miss Murphy.
Yeah, shout out to her. Yeah.
Yeah.
So she was mad supportive, and she showed me our local community college. She's like, they don't check status here. You can even apply to some scholarships or whatnot. So I went ahead and did that. In the meantime, my family's over here trying to fight my deportation case along with my lawyer. And finally came to the point where I had to come out and tell my friends.
Yeah, so none of your friends knew, right?
None of my friends knew.
Did that impact just the way that you felt like you could hang out with them? Was there stuff that you felt like you could do, stuff that you felt like you could, like if they were going out, I don't know if they were.
High school kids don't necessarily respect the law.
Right.
And but so I'm for assuming you, it's a little bit different. Like, y'all might get like a slap on the wrist or something. I got something a little different going on.
Yeah, I mean, I think to an extent, I was always a little bit more cautious. Mm-hmm. But I think just coming out and telling your friends that, yo, like, I don't know how to put it. Because at the time, people didn't even use the word undocumented. They used illegal, which is so dehumanizing.
It's incredibly. And it also, I couldn't understand it. It was, like, so upsetting that they handcuffed your father.
Yeah.
He was a restaurant owner. He was, like, been a, you know, I mean, your mother was a college professor. Like, that's crazy to me that then they, like, the way they treat as criminals as if you are, I mean, that's, I think that's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely not ideal.
Right.
Uh-huh.
But you were saying that coming out to your friends and it sounded like there was some shame around that.
Yeah, it takes a lot of courage. And
for sure.
Quite frankly, like, had I never been forced to do it, because I was facing deportation, so I had no other option. That was the ultimatum. Right. I don't think I ever would have come out. And it's really funny because I think throughout high school, I would actually say I was much more conservative than where my thinking is now.
Oh, interesting. So
I was like one of those, like, kids. And my best friend was like, we jokingly called him, like, the redneck white boy, even though he was Indian. So like the first person I came out to was my Jewish brother, and because his dad was connected to local politicians and stuff.
Lawyers. Yeah. He said knew a lot of lawyers. You a smart kid in a lot of ways. I get that. You're not just book smart, buddy. I get that. Maybe you know somebody.
Man, you learned that from Will Smith, bro. That's that Will Smith education right there.
So I came out to him. He was very supportive. He's like, whatever we got to do, we try things.
Did that surprise you?
I didn't know what to expect.
Was that? Did you feel just like this? How did that feel?
It was like a huge weight off his shoulders, right? You know, to know that your friends still got your back.
Yeah, that's
and
huge.
I told my Indian friend, and even he was really supportive. And that was like, he's like, "Yo, bro, why don't you tell me earlier? My dad, those people at the embassy and stuff, the consulate." Wow. And so I was real lucky. And my older cousin, who I live with, he's in a wheelchair, and he's actually on a ventilator too, because he has a debilitating disease where his muscles are broken down. But so I think he's a lot of like the inspiration I have. And he was part of the reason I was able to go through junior year, senior year. Because I wake up every morning and I see him and I'm like, in my head, I think like, what gives him the ability to just go through and smile through every day, even though he's suffering so much? And in hindsight, like I can put that into perspective. Like I'm like, shit I got to go through is like small compared to that. So.
Wow. What perspective? I mean.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I did me. I did well in school. And
so you came out, and this was this deported the date that you were this deadline or whatever, was that while you were still in high school?
Yeah, so they basically said you get to graduate. So I was supposed to graduate in summer 2010, and my deportation was scheduled for August.
Okay.
So in the meantime,
is that legal? Yeah. Again, my ignorance. Did they give you that year because you were just a minor and they can't deport minors? Why did they give you till you graduate?
I was able to get a really competent attorney.
Oh, okay. So your attorney. Really good.
Okay. And she was able to get that extension.
Okay.
It's crazy how much so many of these things come down to just getting the right attorney.
No, a lot of times that is the case. And even a lot of times in like South Asian communities, Asian communities, Filipino communities, even Mexican communities, for my friends, I hear that people get thrown under the bus by like attorneys who scam you or take your money.
Well, yeah, I mean... In the book, she was talking about one of the young gentlemen that came. The family paid $10,000 to come, and then found out that the papers were false. There's a lot. That's
So a lot of times, you hear about like coming the quote unquote right way, but like my parents tried that through asylum case. It didn't work.
Right.
And I can go into our case a little bit more further down the story.
Right.
But so it doesn't work. But I remember in my deportation case, three of the things that happened, and I think it's really important. So when people were telling me like, yo, you just got to stay here because at least he tried to come the right way. I remember saying, yeah, at least like I tried to come the right way, which is problematic, and I'll tell you why. And the second thing I always did was, oh, yeah, like I work hard. I want to go to school. I was brought here to no fault of my own. So that was like strike two.
Okay.
And the third thing was like, oh, like I'm not a criminal, et cetera, et cetera. And like that rhetoric was there because like you don't want to feel alienated. You want to feel like a part of society. But then like looking back at it, like when you say like you tried to come the right way, you're basically saying that all your like Latino brothers and sisters, are invalid in the way they tried to come. Mm-hmm. And so after, fast forward.
Are you trying to break down the idea that there is a right way to come to the country?
No. I guess I should go back to my case first and I could touch on those things.
Sure, if you don't mind.
But ultimately, like with my deportation case, I found out I was going to stay in the country like 3 days prior to being deported.
Wow.
And it's crazy. I actually prayed to God for a sign. Because through all that stress, I didn't know what was going to happen. So I was like, yo, God, I'll put it in your hands. Like, if you want me to remain in the country, send me like a bouquet of roses. Wow. Tell me that everything's going to be all right. And if you want me to leave, send me a cut piece of rope telling me this is the end of my rope and you got something else in store for my life. And I asked for the roses because my other older cousin, my grandparents' daughter, yeah. She had prayed for the same sign when she was contemplating whether or not she should enter religious life.
Oh, interesting.
And she got her sign. So I was like, why not? Like, shit, I'll try it. And so I prayed that prayer. And 3 days prior to the week before my scheduled deportation, we went to like a prayer service. And as I'm coming out the service, like I see a trail of rose petals on the ground. And I'm like, no fucking way. This ain't actually happening. And I remember walking outside and my grandpa went to go pull out the van. And this random Asian woman I've never seen in my life starts walking towards my grandma with a bouquet of roses. And she gives it to my grandma. They making small talk. And at that time, no one else knew what was going on. But in my mind, I was like, yo, I'm all right. I'll be okay.
That's crazy.
And so like the following week,
I just got chills. That's crazy.
It's crazy. And the following week, I had like a reporter at my house. And he come downstairs and he looking at me funny, like, shouldn't you be packing and stuff? And I was like, nah, that's a nice day. I'll go play basketball today. Because I was in my mind, I was like, everything's going to be all right.
Wow.
And lo and behold, lawyer comes 3 days after, 3 days prior to my scheduled date. And she's like, yo, you get to stay in the country. So I was granted then what's called deferred action.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, it's something that Department of Homeland Security has always had the ability to do. Except they never, ever granted that discretion.
Wow.
So in 2012, when Obama came out, he basically said, like, you have this ability already, but you can apply this, prosecutorial discretion more favorably for a certain people who meet this criteria.
Okay.
So you got deferred action.
I got the deferred action.
And then is that, like, indefinite or as long as you want it?
No, it was indefinite. So basically, I got the work permit. And it was renewable 2 years. Okay. That's how all work permits kind of work.
Right.
So every 2 years you have to apply. Again.
You apply, you pay like $465.
Right.
You know.
Is your attorney have to get involved? Like, is that
something? So I still go through my attorney because my case is a bit more complicated than other folks because I had that what's called a final order of removal.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So they look at it more intensely.
So how, for lack of a better word, secure is your status?
It's not that secure. So I know, like, right now I have it. And then, like I was saying, in 2012, because the undocumented youth were brave enough to, like, take the streets and, like, demand that change, now that blanket's extended to, like, the youth who meet that criteria.
Oh, you've expanded the criteria.
Yeah, so in 2012, when President Obama came out and made that announcement, it's basically saying, like, for what happened in my case, is now applicable to other youth in my situation.
Oh, wow.
So I think it's about 1 to 2 million people who got to benefit from that.
Wow. Okay, so this is what I wanted to go back to. So you mentioned the reporter. You came out to your friends. Did you make a conscious choice at some point, to like go public? Was that something that people had pushed upon you? How did you feel about that? That was the thing that I wanted to go back to.
Yeah, so for sure, like in high school, I was like the shyest kid. I was like the most awkward kid. And I wouldn't ever want to go public. And that's why, like, to this day, when I see people like come out and own their story, they own their struggle, I have so much admiration for it.
Right.
Because I know had that been me, I would not have done that if I had a choice to do it.
Right.
But I had no choice, so it was kind of easier.
When you say you had no choice, can you, like, just that was the way that you thought?
Fucking get deported or you stay?
So you thought that was the way to change things?
What was?
To get public and try to get campaign and...
Yeah, my lawyer was actually the one who encouraged it.
Okay.
And she made sure, like, whatever I try to do would be safe. And so that's when... social media is so amazing. So my cousin actually created a petition on my behalf.
Oh, wow.
And it picked up a lot of speed.
Oh, cool.
And my local pastor actually recommended me to a community organization, and they were able to do a story on me, and then, like, it kind of blew up from there.
And you've talked about your faith a little bit, so I want to take a quick side road.
Yeah.
And do you mind talking about, you're a Christian?
Yeah, I am Christian.
I'm looking at the Pope, so I felt bad that I cursed a little while ago.
You should feel more bad that you didn't took my joke I used off the air. That's what you should feel bad about. Honestly, Father, forgive him.
It's stealing, right? I guess that just stole.
A commandment. You know what I mean?
So you were raised that way? Or was that something that you're... Is that something you're comfortable talking about?
Like, probably...
Okay.
A little bit.
It's important to you. It's something that you've
really... It's important, but it's something I struggle with all the time.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
We can clean that out. We can test it. Okay, so let's... So what did that public campaign look like? You had a petition, you had a reporter, and you were talking to this organization.
Yeah.
Were you... You were then thrust into a limelight, and you're talking about yourself as a shy and awkward kid. How did you handle that? Was that really difficult? Or, again, was it the fact that you were just like, fight or flight, I got to do this?
It was like, yeah, definitely it was a flight or flight response. And part of it was like not wanting to be more further ridiculed, not wanting to be antagonized. So a lot of the stuff I said, at least to like the mainstream public, was on the lines of like, oh, like, look at me, like, I work hard, I'm not criminal.
Right.
Like, and people would put stuff in my mouth, like, they'd be like, yo, Eves, at least you tried to come the right way. And I remember just going along and agreeing with it. And then I remember I was on a talk show host with, like, this old white Christian gentleman. And on his talk show, he was like, yo, something, I let Eves go and stay in this country, he looks like a great guy. Except one condition, I'd let him stay, except for the fact if he was Muslim. If he's Muslim, he gotta go.
He said that?
And he said that. And I remember to this day, looking back on that.
Were you there?
Yeah, it was a talk show host.
That's...
Yeah, and he said that. And I remember proudly exclaiming, like, no, I'm Christian, I'm not Muslim. So in hindsight, granted, like, I've got to make a whole lot of connections over the last 2-3 years. I've gotten involved in like community work, so the way I think now is way different than I was back in high school.
Also, you were trying to get through. I mean, I don't think anyone's gonna sit anyone. I don't think anyone's gonna judge you for any of those kind of, you know, decisions and trying to. You were trying to survive, man.
Trying to survive, but it's also like just learning things and like
being
able to reflect on it, and that's huge.
Let's talk actually a little bit about those. Let's talk about actually, because in the book, Deepa mentions that you have become a part of this movement, the undocumented youth movement. Do you mind talking a little bit about what your involvement looked like and what that movement is?
For sure. So I remember, so like stuff just worked out for me. So when I found out I was going to stay in the country, my scholarship director at community college hit me up, and she was like, yo, we saw you in the news and we heard you're staying, we'd love for you to come back to our community college and like we'd pay for your school. And I was like,
wow,
thank God.
Yeah, wow,
I gotta accept that. And so I did. And so I told you how I'm super awkward first week of school. I didn't really know anyone, but I saw one of my classmates. I was like, all right, he black, he like politics. And that was that. I went in. So I saw him at the lunch table. I went and sat next to him. I was like, yo, bro, you heard Wyclef Jean running for president of Haiti?
And that's greatest friend pickup line ever. Like,
and he just looked at me like, boy, what is this boy talking about? He's like, I don't know. Like, who is Wyclef Jean? I was like, Wyclef Jean from the Fugees, bro. And he's like, nope, I don't know.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so there was an awkward silence, and I don't know what possessed me to ask him this, but I was like, bro, what you think about, like, our nation's immigration system? And he goes, funny you ask, because, like, I actually don't have papers myself, but I found out about our community college scholarship program through a great community organization called Liberty's Promise, and they helped me with the college application process, and now I'm here. And this is how you know I'm ignorant as fuck. I couldn't wrap my mind around the fact that he's black and he doesn't have papers. He's undocumented.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, but aren't you black? He's like, I'm Afro-Latino. And I was like, what does that mean?
Wow.
And he's like, he broke it down. He said, I'm both black and I'm Latino. Like, why is that so hard to understand? I'm from Panama. And after that day, I never got my shit straight. So I was all right.
So was he the way that you like learned about the movement, or did you guys, or was he just?
Yeah, he was more politically involved than I was already, but I remember talking to him and we were like, we should start up a student club because I'm sure there are other kids just like us.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, And we had great support from local community org. They're called Casa de Maryland. Casa like house. And they're actually like 5 minutes on the street from my home.
You really want to start an organization with a dude who don't know who Wyclef Jean is, though? That's what you need to ask yourself at a certain point. Yeah, you're comfortable taking that leap?
Sometimes you got a lot of faith. You got to take those risks every now and then.
So you guys started the club at the school. And it was basically you wanted to help create a community.
Basically, yeah. So we actually had a lot of help from our mentor at Casa de Maryland. She was the youth organizer, and her name Rosa Lozano. She's still my mentor to this day. And she walked us through the ropes on how to get it up and going. And they really challenged me to grow as a leader because both of them are like comfortable with working in public space. But they knew I was like sitting on my ass. So I remember the first meeting, they were like, yo, we're going to teach them a lesson. We're not going to show up early to the meeting. We're going to put them on the spot.
Oh, wow.
So I remember going into the first meeting, waiting on them to do everything. And then they weren't present. And yeah, I kind of looked
at it. How many people were at that first meeting?
Probably like 5 or 6. And it was a mixed crowd. It was people who wanted to support the cause, learn more about it. And there were some people who are also undocumented. At that point, they had not come out to me, but they were there. And the important thing was we were able to create that space on campus where we would get that support. And our community college has always been about that, where they've been about supporting undocumented
students. Is that rare for community colleges, or is that the norm? Like, I want to know how exceptional.
I would actually think that's quite rare.
Okay.
Only based on the fact that like 1% of undocumented kids actually graduate college.
Wow.
So we're like very select few.
Wow. And,
so that support is very sorely needed across the board. Only like a handful of states even offer access to tuition.
Wow.
And yeah, you don't even get access to financial aid. So it's a struggle. So every piece of help, every community person you meet is like a win.
Well, it just sounds like, yeah, you've had in the community resources have been really strong in your case. And that sounds like there was a strong awareness within the community also.
Yeah, so I'm lucky because the place where we live, it's a very blue state. Mm-hmm. And our county specifically has always been very supportive. Our local community college has been the one community college that's always given access to tuition for undocumented students, even before it became like a statewide law.
Wow.
And
so now it's a state law in Maryland.
Yeah, so it's called Maryland Dream Act. Granted, it's not the best tuition law out there, but it basically says if you meet certain criteria, you can pay in-state tuition at colleges and universities in Maryland. So that was actually the first campaign that we undertook.
As this youth movement?
At least in our state of Maryland.
Right.
Yeah, so like GASA Maryland at the helm, my student group on campus was able to build support. We did a lot of just like, you know, sat them with the paper and you get kids to sign up for your club and have meetings and stuff. So we did all that.
Wow.
And then we organized a bus full of folks to go to Annapolis and like talk to legislators and all that. And but what really got me hooked to that work was I remember Rosa invited me to one of the youth group meetings at CASA. And the thing was a Know Your Rights training. Mm. And I remember coming out of that space thinking, like, had I known this information, maybe my parents would have still been here.
Wow.
Like, had I known not to open the door, et cetera, they might have still been here. And also in that space, meeting other brothers and sisters from, like, Salvador, from Honduras, from Mexico, and hearing, like, their traumatic experience of trying to, like, come to the United States. Because, like, I think in the whole debate of immigration, there's so much thrown around. The question we don't ask ourselves enough is like, what the fuck compels people to risk their lives to come to this country? And for me in high school, that was not, I didn't know about that. But then just to hear their stories, to connect, that's when I knew like, okay, at strike two, like when I was like, okay, I tried to come the right way, I cannot no longer say stuff like that. Because like that system ain't really there for us to come the right way in the first place.
Right.
Like you don't think about U.S. foreign policy that drives mass migration to the United States. That's a side note.
Yeah. I would be remiss if I didn't bring up what you are, that you're a South Asian undocumented immigrant. Most of the time when we think about undocumented immigrants, we do think about Latinos. I mean, Casa de Maryland, and that's mentioned. And we've had a couple conversations with Deepa where she was talking about that. This,
yeah.
Have you come in contact? Are they, is it harder for, would you say it's harder for those in the South Asian community, or not harder, is that, but are you seeing a struggle for them to come out, as you call it?
I would say that within the South Asian community, it's a bit more complicated for folks to come out. Cause I feel like, for one, our community still has a lot of shame towards the subject.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, even for my parents, they didn't really come out and share any of that information with folks. And I know, at least from the other, my other Asian friends that I speak to, their parents are very like hush hush about it as well.
Mm.
And a lot of times the larger community doesn't really have that support either. So because of that, we keep low profile.
Would you say that the narrative around the model minority is problematic to helping people come out about this, or do you think there's not a relevant? I'm just
no, I definitely think that model minority myth is part of the reason why undocumented South Asian families, undocumented Asian families don't come out, because mm-hmm. it's this whole thing that you're living up to this false livelihood of that we're perfect,
mm-hmm.
and in doing so, like, you see a lot of issues. Like immigration status not ever being disclosed, people don't seek help. Right. Other things which I'm not as educated on, so I can't really touch upon. But even sure. things like domestic violence, and
right?
Yeah,
like alcohol abuse. Those things are not ever put out on this in the light,
right?
Even though they're issues problems that our community, faces. Yeah, they're problems. They're massive in our problems.
But to the point where I actually didn't know until yesterday that how many undocumented immigrants that were coming from South Asia. I honestly didn't. Yeah. That's how unaware I was. And we're relatively tapped into the community now.
Yeah.
And just, it makes me think, wow, there's so much more to know.
Yeah. For sure.
What is awareness building a big part of the movement now? Are you still involved with the movement? Actually a more important question.
That's a question. I'll answer both parts of your question. So first, I think awareness building is definitely a huge part of it. And I think that's part of the reason, or that was part of Deepa's mindset in creating her book.
Right.
Was she wanted to put like South Asian undocumented faces out there to know, like, and our ask was like, we want our community to stand up with us. Right. So because if you ain't gonna ask for help, you're gonna demand change, like, you're not gonna get it.
Right.
Right.
And so part two, I say I am sort of involved, not to the extent I was in years past, but, I try to support in whatever way I can.
I had a couple questions.
Yeah,
one, is there any way, if you get citizenship, that you'd be able to bring your parents back?
That's actually a good question. My younger brother's a U.S. citizen, mm-hmm. and that's huge. Like, the difference between us, we're 3 years apart,
right?
But I came here when I was a year and a half. He was mm-hmm. born a year and a half later.
Right.
Like, he fell out the vagina on U.S. soil.
Yeah.
And for that, like, he has papers. Yeah. And, like, our trajectories are way different.
Really?
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, but long story short, he's turning 21 this summer. So after he hits 21, he can go through the process of sponsoring my parents and bringing them back.
Oh, wow.
But to fast forward a bit, like I told you, my parents had tried to stay here through their asylum case, and that was an entire mess. My mom also had a work sponsorship. So countries like India, Philippines, and Mexico, the backlog for the visa is up to 10 years.
When you say backlog for the visa, what do you mean by that?
So, like, my mom's case was from 2001.
Oh,
it was
wow.
not brought up to the court until 2011, 2012.
Oh, my God.
Like, 2 summers ago. Like, 2 winters ago. And at that point, like, you talk about, oh, I'm trying to do things the right way, quote unquote. Like, her potential employer just takes a shit ton of money from us.
Oh,
and then,
wow.
like, he doesn't even put other documents to support.
Wow.
So, like, even when you're trying to go, quote unquote, even what American people would deem as, like, oh, like, high skilled labor, whatever, like, that doesn't work either.
But it sounds like the system, from what I'm hearing, and I'm not that educated on this, so this might be a wrong interpretation, but it sounds like there is, at every step in the way, people are taking advantage of this community.
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty accurate.
But it's so crazy to me that in this country, a nation built on immigration,
uh-huh.
that we don't respect the idea of immigration.
Yeah, and I think that's also kind of like a catch 22, or like there's a fine silver lining there, because if you look at immigration historically in this country, like immigrants have never actually been welcomed here, aside from like the West European migrants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're built upon.
But they're built
this,
upon.
This nation is built upon that.
Yeah.
And those first people were immigrants.
Yeah.
Whether they wanted to think about that or not. But yeah, that is an interesting point, that we've never really been welcome.
Uh-huh.
I had another question.
Oh yeah, go ahead.
What's the quickest way you think to get citizenship is like
for
do you, yeah, is there a path laid out for you? For you specifically?
For me, I probably just gotta get married.
That's what I was thinking. That's exactly why I asked this question, dog. Ladies, you hear the voice. He's in pharmacy school. He woke. You know?
He crazy.
Got great teeth, this kid. What are we doing, huh?
You made him cover his mouth.
Change lives out here, ladies. Get involved. Be active. Community service. You know?
Deepa did ask for a pledge for action.
Disrupt.
So that's disrupt.
Disrupt your current dating life.
That's disrupt. This is hilarious.
You're crazy.
You know?
But actually, I'm not gonna lie. This is one of the times I actually fully support Akash.
Stand for
guys,
something.
Guys, you want to hit
stand
at us?
Stand for this man getting down on one knee.
We will be your. We will screen the bio data for you.
His daddy can cook. You know.
I want to ask if I go back to like the political realm of it.
Okay.
What are the big things that the movement is looking to change or looking for?
Okay, yeah, I think that's a great question.
Thank you. I have like one an episode.
Yeah, buddy.
No, you got a lot of great questions. But I think originally, so like to kind of show you the progress of, I guess, the youth immigrant movement, it really started with trying to get access to college, college access. But I think from there, we've been able to analyze ourselves critically and like, look at things in our narrative that were problematic. So like going back to like the things I had mentioned to you earlier about like, oh, denouncing criminality, saying you work hard, talking about trying to come right way, and even denouncing my ties to Islam. So I don't think that it's a coincidence that I denied like ties to community, like Black community, Latino community, and like Muslim community, because those are the communities that are most targeted for mass incarceration, mass detention, and mass surveillance. So, like, when I said, like, oh, I try to work hard, like, I'm not a criminal, like, I've been fortunate enough to have conversations with other Black immigrant youth, other Black immigrant people who have told me, like, in this country, you know, like, those kind of things are very racially coded language for basically saying you're not Black.
Right.
And that was real. And I remember, like I said, I'd use that, I'd accept when people would say he tried to come the right way. But then hearing the struggle that and trauma that so many of my Latino brothers and sisters, even Asian brothers and sisters who came across the border had faced to be here, that's not something I'm ever willing to look at and be like, oh.
Willing to judge.
Yeah, that's not something I will ever judge.
Right.
And I think it's so important, again, to ask, like, what the hell compels people to come here? And people very seldom come here, like, by choice, where it's, like, an easy decision.
Right.
And a lot of times...
They sacrifice a lot.
So much to come here. And a lot of times it is because, like, the economic instability, the unsafety in those countries that drive people to move here. And, like, I ain't going into history lesson. But, yeah, there's a lot of literature. There's even movies out there.
Yeah.
That kind of break down, go into the first steps on, like, how U.S. foreign policy actually dictated a lot of these migration patterns. And then the third, like, separating myself from my Muslim brothers and sisters, I don't know why I would ever try to do that. Because right. At the end of the day, like, you see, even to this day, I think yesterday, a Sikh man was gunned down in a hate crime.
Yesterday? And
I think it was earlier this week. And so, but I'm very, like through Deepa, I'm able to learn how the rest of the community reacts to the trauma, and it's so wonderful to see how, like, Sikh community stands in solidarity with
right.
the Muslim community and the larger South Asian community. Because it's not enough to say, oh, look, I'm not Muslim. But, like, that doesn't mean you're still not going to be mistaken and gunned down anyways.
Right.
And, like, even with my parents' case, trying to appeal to this, like, false stereotype, oh, we can keep our head down and work hard, work our asses off, try to do our best, try to contribute. That don't mean nothing. But at the end of the day, you're still going to be deported.
Well, also, I mean, you talked earlier and you were talking about how your dad was crazy and for dreaming and like going to breast. But it sounded like it was a faulty taillight, right?
Yeah, it was
like
a that faulty was not taillight.
Like that was the thing that, if, that even if thing. It kept his head down and like, yeah, fault taillight goes out sometimes, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like that's.
Yeah. And like, so I'm not going to go too much into like immigration policy, enforcement policy, but they have programs, what is called like 287G.
Mm-hmm.
And
worry about that, yeah.
Secure communities. Okay. So where like local law enforcement is allowed to collaborate with federal right. immigration enforcement. And that's part of the reason why they were able to take my dad's information and send it to immigration. And programs like these like terrorize the communities.
Right.
And like, so we don't trust police either. Right. So when if stuff goes down in the household or if even something bad happens to you, you're not going to feel comfortable in reaching out to law enforcement for help.
That's a big problem.
Yeah.
We don't have a ton of time left with you, and you got to get out to school. I know listeners are going to want to know.
Pharmacy what, school, ladies.
Listeners want to know. Yeah, so what are you up to now? What's
So I think, yeah, I'm going to pharmacy school up in University of Maryland, Baltimore. And I think it's a good note to close on. Like, I'm going to school probably like 3, 4, 5, 6 blocks down from where, like, Freddie Gray was shot down
wow.
last April, which is 1 year anniversary of that. And I think to relate it back to like my work in the immigrants movement, it's like when the protest and the riots broke out, like immigrant activists, immigrant community came out and like looked down on that. Like, what the hell are these people doing? Why are they rioting? But I was like, yo, how can we sit on our asses here, like asking people to look at our cases empathetically if we ain't even willing to do the same for, like, our black brothers and sisters.
Word.
You know? So a lot of the work I've been doing now, we have a local group in the DMV area. We're called API Resistance. So a lot of the work we do is how do we talk to our own families even about, like, anti-blackness? What does it mean to support black lives? What does it mean Black Lives Matter? For me, it's easy because I have black immigrant friends. I have black friends who I know are down with me and I'm down with them. So, like, even the fact that I'm able to go to school, I was telling you earlier about Maryland Dream Act. What a lot of people don't know about that is one of the reasons we won that is because we got an overwhelming support from Baltimore City. And it was actually black high school youth who had, like, nothing to gain from this, who actually went out and knocked on over 1,000 doors, who talked to engaged voters and got people out to the polls to support this. And mind you, they're talking to other poor people in their own community, they're poor black folks. And a lot of times, like, our communities are pitted against each other.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're like, oh, so we're poor. Like, why would you give more support to immigrant people when we don't even have enough? But then they went and they broke down the myths. They talked to their own community. And, like, they're the reason I get to go to school now. And I think for me, that's huge. And that's why, for me, like, Black Lives Matter.
So, well, what I'm hearing from you is just that, and what you were talking about earlier with the immigrant community, all those three that you separate, they're all interconnected. Everything's interconnected. So these separation between these communities is not helping anyone gain progress. That's a really powerful note.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, like, all this stuff is, like, I know it's a lot to digest and understand, but I think the kind of pathway I always find helpful is, like, you find the person who's most affected or the person who's at the intersections of all the identities and let them fucking speak. Because it's like, who better to understand, like, the intersections of, like, what it's like to be policed domestically and also have immigration enforcement than, like, a Muslim immigrant person or a black immigrant person? Like, duh. Like, no shit.
Right.
They can attest to it better than anyone, and they can do it in a way, like, where you and I can understand it.
Right.
And break it down for you. So that's that.
Eves, brother, thank you so much for jumping. I look forward. I look forward to when you are president.
Yeah, take it.
Have a chance to lose.
Ladies, hit us up on the Twitter for Eves' information. No, really, honestly though, I think this is an important one. So I hope people definitely got to listen to this and share this one. I think that, you know, we put out these easy way for you guys to share it. We have a Facebook post, and a lot of people have been liking it, and I really appreciate that. If you move your mouse just a few inches over, you can press that share button, and we can help get Eve's and many other stories out there. I think that raising awareness around this issue is incredibly important. I think breaking down the myths is incredibly important. So let's do that. Let us get active as well.
I'm not going to be really loud and cuss you guys out like I normally do to rate the podcast, which you never do, because Eve's grandparents are upstairs and I don't want to offend them. But just know that
it's in the subtext.
Don't
they get
appreciate
it.
The laziness of you guys when it comes to 5-star ratings on iTunes.
Just to break it, the reason that we ask for that, if it's not clear, is just because it helps us grow what we're doing. And the bigger audience that we have, the bigger community we have, the more that we can create a platform for these stories, the more that we can create a platform for all of our stories, which, you know, allows people to not be invisible anymore. And that's something that we really want and we need your help with. So please do that. Eves, thank you, brother.
You wouldn't be horrified. I've told them that before, these people.
Anyway, guys, we're going to come back at you next week with another dope episode. So definitely tune in. I'm Arjun.
I'm Akash.
We'll catch you next week.
God bless.